The following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now presented by Little John Financial Services. It's David Little John with True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, it is that time of the week, and it's time for the True Wealth Radio Show on this, the greatest Tuesday you've had all week. I am your host, Dave Little John. Joining me in studio today,
Matt Dixon,
but also
Emma Arndt.
Thanks, Emma R. She R too. I see. I'm making it up as I go. That was total ad lib. That's what we get. I have one of those. You guys both have your own. It's good stuff. Today we are going to talk about. It's kind of gruesome coming off of the intro here from the news cycle, but it turns out what a segue. We finished up with tax season, and there are two things certain in this world. What are they?
Taxes and dying.
Okay, and so today we're not talking about taxes.
Dying.
yeah.
Give you one guess.
Yeah, we're all out of taxes today.
And you're about out of time.
So, it's kind of an awkward one. But I feel like we really
Why do people make it so awkward?
Well, mostly because you don't want it to happen, typically. Right? There's a natural survival instinct here. So it's like, wait, we're going to talk about when that finally happens. That's pretty morbid. I mean, yes, is the answer, but the answer is not to pretend it doesn't exist. The answer is not to, just never deal with it. The answer is, hey, let's be the grown-ups in the room and let's take a look at this. Heard a great quote, right? Let me see if I can get this one right. It was something to the effect of estate planning, like good estate planning is for when people die, but great estate planning is for the people that lived.
Yeah, that's a decent quote.
Yeah. And anyway,
I like it.
It's kind of a thing because, we're all going to deal with it at some point. Mm-hmm. And yes, we hope it's a ways off. But here's the problem. Some stuff, it's easy to defer because you're like, well, two reasons. One, I don't want it to come. And two, if it does, it's not my problem anymore.
A lot of people are really reactionary to it, right? Where it's like, oh, well, they died. Now what? Whereas, if you just kind of get in front of it and say, well, we know this is coming, but why don't we make things clean and tidy now so that when that time comes, people can actually just take the time to grieve instead of having to grieve and figure everything else out.
Yeah, it's true that it's easy to defer this one. Like, it really is, mm-hmm. because it's literally the last thing that you would plan for.
Right.
Well, I've seen it too, where people wait to plan until there's a chronic illness, or they get cancer or something like that. And that's really, you want to be spending your time with your family, not doing all of the planning.
Right. Well,
it's true.
And of course, the chronic illness, depending on the aggressiveness, it's a loud whistle that says you better get this sort of managed.
Yeah.
The accident is the one that you don't see coming. And that's the real reason that you want to get ahead of this stuff is in case you don't see it coming. And I can tell you, it truly is a gift to everybody else. It's not something you do for you. You're never going to see it. But this is something you do if you care about other people. We have talked about this before, but this is a refresher. Okay. Now, there are a handful of times that you don't need to worry about estate planning. Any idea what they are?
There's nothing that you own.
Right.
At all. Like, you're going to die, and there's not going to be anything left behind.
You're worthless.
Mm-hmm.
Your net worth, that is.
No.
Yeah.
I was like, how do I pivot from this to make it a little lighter?
Yeah. No, in this case, if you don't have anything, then there's nothing that's going to go anywhere after you.
I've dealt with this, though, right?
Like,
we do a lot of planning for people, and people from kind of all different walks of life, and sometimes it literally is like they think they need a trust, and it's like, well, like, what are you trying to leave behind? Well, not really anything. I'm like, well, maybe in this instance a trust doesn't really apply to you.
It's true. So, and by the way, if you're curious, we are going to talk about trust a little bit today. It's not going to be a deep dive into this stuff, but it's going to be like, why is it relevant? But I don't want to get off track here early on. Funny thing about trusts, they're usually used in place of a will, Mm-hmm. Okay, but what do we know about wills? So first, give me the rundown. Like, what do we like? Why do we care about wills, and what do we know about?
I mean, in real layman's terms, plain and simple, a will is just a way that you are describing what you want to happen to the stuff that you have when you die. Here's a set of instructions that says, here's where everything goes.
Yes, and why do we need a will?
Well, because when you die, right, like if you do have stuff, it goes to court, right, and then a judge looks at the things that you have, and if there is no will, he's got to, or she, whoever it is that's a judge, has to kind of determine where the stuff goes. But if you have a list of instructions, they can just read it and then honor those wishes.
Sure. There's actually some things that I don't think get talked about a lot in this circumstance also, though. So, one, if you don't have a will, there's still laws that govern where your stuff is supposed to go. Mm-hmm. However, it leaves your estate in disarray because if you don't have instructions for who's supposed to be responsible for the stuff, if it's not you,
mm-hmm.
that lack of clarity opens up the opportunity for some chaos, right?
Right, because like, what if you had mm-hmm. a mortgage on your property and then you die and no one has like power of attorney to, or like financial power of attorney to go pay the next mortgage payment?
Right. There's also, this is one that's not spoken of a lot, but a bunch of you out there listening, I'm going to say this and you're going to go, yep, I've heard that story. Theft. Mm. Folks will just come in mm-hmm. and take stuff.
I've seen things, that happen.
Yeah, things that don't have a title associated with them just disappear.
Yep.
Yep.
And there's not a really good way to track it because that's all the non-traceable stuff that just, if it walks away, it walks away.
It's a good point.
And so there's some real... That's when I talk about sort of the chaos of things, it's, oh, well, what if there were heirlooms or things? You know, there's not really a title for your, all right, I'll use an example of like, let's say you've got a gun collection, okay? Mm-hmm. There's actually oftentimes a lot of value associated with something like that. And somebody comes in and they just take the whole safe and all the guns. And before you know it, like, those are supposed to be registered product. They're in black market circulation now. There's a lot of issues with that. So we try not to have those sorts of things happen, and you do some of that by appropriate pre-planning. By the way, did you know there's an implicit hidden issue with the gun thing? I didn't even think about it until just now, too.
What?
How do you open the safe?
Get a really good angle grinder and just start
Correct.
Going for the hinges.
Correct. I mean, you basically have to break into it. But that's not necessarily the case. And something that we would go into is part of planning is how do people find the stuff?
Oh, man. Mm-hmm. You know, I've dealt with this a lot when someone's like, oh, you know, I just keep all the documents in the safe. And then I'll ask the question, does anyone know where the keys or the combination is to the safe? And then they have this blank stare like, oh, my gosh, I never thought about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's
like,
the treasure map.
My trust is in the safe, but no one knows how to get into it.
Or how about mm-hmm. this? I have a trust and I have a safe, but I also have a whole bunch of different accounts spread across different institutions online, mm-hmm. and I have paperless statements, so nobody knows how to even track them down, and they don't know how to log into my computer or my accounts to figure it out.
Yeah.
Yep.
So there are lots of opportunities for things to disappear when there's a lack of organization.
Yeah. Don't make people guess. It's yeah. just a general rule.
That is the general rule. And so today, I think we're kind of laying the groundwork for this is something for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the younger you are, you're a teenager, maybe less so. But especially if you start having a family or you start having any assets, anything that has title associated with it, which are things like cars and property, mm-hmm. then it starts to matter how that stuff's going to get handled if you can't be the one to do it.
Right.
Yep.
And incidentally, there's a tweener spot in there that we don't talk about, which is what if you get incapacitated for a period of time? Estate planning also includes that kind of thinking. Maybe you don't have to die to need somebody to step in and help on a temporary basis. Maybe mm-hmm. not temporary, but you still need somebody. The question is, how do we do that? Okay, so
are we going to talk about all this?
We're going to talk about all this. So what we're going to go through here over the next half an hour or so, we're going to cover a bunch of ground really fast. This is going to be one of these that on a podcast, you'll probably want to save it so you can come back to it. It's not a full-blown reference guide, but it's going to feel like a reference guide. We're going to move fast. We're going to try to have as much fun as possible with a kind of dark topic, but I think it's that important that we need to do it.
Okay, let's throw some education out on the air.
Okay, so anyway, when we come back, we're going to start with when you die, maybe not you, but when somebody dies, what do you expect? What's going to come next? So we'll break down what you're going to see, and then we're going to start talking about how you're going to deal with it, and then we're going to talk about how do you get ahead of this, okay?
Okay.
All that, and believe it or not, we'll do the best we can to make it fun, too. Stick around. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
Matt Dixon.
I'm Arndt.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Show. Dave Littlejohn in studio with...
Oh, Matt Dixon.
And Emma Arndt.
All right. I'm going to remind you guys, this is a podcast that you're going to want to go hunt down. You're going to want to... if you're not subscribed already, you should be, right? That way you get notifications about this stuff. And you can also subscribe. We're streaming on YouTube, so you can grab it there if you want to. We need more cameras, so Emma will end up on camera, too.
I got one for you.
Oh, I bet you do.
I always got something up my sleeve. I got another camera for
you.
Yeah,
it's just not.
Okay.
So do we. Just so we're aware.
I can sell ice to a...
Maybe, but I am not an Eskimo. So
got a camera to sell you.
It does not match the set. That's all I can tell you. I like
it's
when they
huge
all
upgrade.
White balance the same way. That is just, all right, we are going to move forward now. So we're talking today about... what happens when you die.
Okay.
Like we talked about earlier, not the most savory topic, but still important to cover here. I do have, you know, one recommendation if you would like to live forever. Just continue to buy one-year renewable term insurance. Statistically, that stuff never pays out.
There you go. I like it. Wow. You just pulled like a financial advisor joke, and I did not see
you're
that
like,
coming.
This is like, that doesn't make sense. All right. No, the joke is that, of course, term insurance you're supposed to rent, but statistically, like 99% of the time, people, their term insurance expires.
Really?
Yeah, it really, it's a high level of non-usage. And so the joke is that the problem is that it doesn't work. Because as you get older, term gets really, really expensive. You know, if you're 100 years old trying to buy term insurance, it's like, well, give me $100 premium for $101 of insurance.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't really pencil very well. It's like, well, yeah, but we're pretty sure you're going to die. So they just won't really give you real insurance anymore at some point.
Right.
Yeah. But the joke is still, it's funny, right? Everybody tells me it's funny.
It was not bad. We'll give it a solid 7.4.
Okay, generous. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Glad the German judge wasn't there. So anyway, you know, gymnastics jokes. So we're talking about what can you expect and what actually happens. Like when somebody dies, it a bunch happens all at once. So anybody want to take a stab at some of the things that are going to happen when somebody dies?
Well, first, there's going to be a lot of emotion on the table.
Yeah,
right?
There is.
And then things kind of start to move pretty quickly, right? Like funerals typically come pretty quickly after that. Death certificates.
There's a whole host of decisions immediately.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to, you know, notify. So typically you notify the non-emergency lines, but they're going to have, you know, an appropriate, you know, coroner type authorized official that's going to validate death. They're going to then document it. You're going to have the state go through the process of creating a death certificate for proof that death has occurred. You're going to then have some type of final arrangements for what happens to your body. So whether it's going to be cremated or buried or what's going to happen. And then, you know, there's the associated elements of that, whether or not you have a place to be buried, whether or not you're paying for one, the vessel they're going to put ashes in when you're done. I mean, there's a whole bunch of decisions. And I actually like the concept of the person that's dying. Before this, if you know what you want, tell people.
Yep.
It's a real gift. I've had the other side of that where accidental death and had to deal with trying to figure out and sort of, well, this is what I think they would have wanted. And everybody's all emotional and you're trying to navigate on top of that these other issues. And sadly, there are times when there's a sales process of like, well, if you really love them, you would have gotten this super fancy box to bury them in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, or if you really love them and they're being cremated, you know, there's this gold in whatever, you know, urn that they're going to go in. And so there's just a lot of opportunities for people that are experiencing a lot of emotion to make bad decisions in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's true.
Yeah.
You know, because I have news for you. The person that's dead doesn't know. Right? They don't see what the decision is. So you're really making that decision for you, too, if you're making it. But if the person before has an idea, they don't have to have that emotional burden. Right? If you know what you want, tell people. Yep. Write it down somewhere. And prepaying for funeral stuff, I don't think that's crazy.
Not with how expensive everything's gotten.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really not crazy. I'm not here either endorsing or not endorsing that right now, but I'm saying that, you know, go look at the circumstance, and if you know what you want, what it does is it makes it a lot easier on your loved ones because you have predefined a lot of things for them.
Well, you know what's crazy to me is how expensive the whole thing is when it doesn't always have to be that way, right? Like, I already bought my gravesite. I know that sounds weird, but...
You personally
have? You
have?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
I already have one for me, my wife, and both the kids. Yeah.
Oh.
I bought it in a bundle pack. Yeah, because you know me. Like, I like to save money. And so I got them for like...
value pack graves.
Yeah, it was like $39 for a gravesite.
And really?
You can stack on top of each other. So I'm like, okay, so I got two of them, and it'll cover four people, and it cost me like $80. And they don't even require a casket. So I'm like, just pitch me in the dirt. $80 later, four people. We're good to go.
All right.
So it doesn't always have to be expensive, is what I'm trying to say.
It does not. So there you go. And at that price point, I suppose you could even afford to be wrong. It's like, you know, we're not going to use that one after all. Well, okay.
Yeah. I guess if you don't want to be buried in a hole with no casket, then that's maybe when you should start planning.
Pretty sure that, because I'm not sure that's even legal. There are still some rules, but yeah. So let's talk about planning. What are some of the things that people need to really think about in as they get into the planning process? And first of all, estate planning, broad topic. Let's talk about what are the documents that you need in place.
How about like you mean like. When it comes to like maybe different accounts and stuff, like bank accounts?
Let's take a big picture here. First and foremost, I would say will is what I'm thinking. You want to have at least a will in place. And I think within that will, you ought to, if you know who you would want to have responsible, the executor or the personal representative you're going to have should be listed there. So who would be the person that's going to be responsible?
Mm-hmm.
If you've got kids, you want to talk about guardianship of kids and listing that in your will. Mm-hmm. And then you also should look at your power of attorney documents and advance directive documents. Okay, so power of attorney, by the way, all this stuff, we're not practicing law when we say this, and I'm not saying that this is the exclusive list. I'm just saying it's a really good start, and a good Google search is going to find this a lot of this stuff too, right?
Mm-hmm.
But so anyway, disclaimer made, we can move forward. When you think about power of attorney, that's also, hey, what if I'm incapacitated? I get in an accident, I'm in a coma, I need somebody that can now have authority to make decisions on my behalf.
For like healthcare and financially.
So that's different. That's a separate thing. The advanced directive or the healthcare power of attorney is specifically for healthcare decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's come out of, there's a lot of legal precedent that's indicated. This is a great idea because, you know, imagine that you're married, your spouse wants one thing to happen, but your parents want something else to have happen if something happens to you.
Yeah.
That's a mess, right? Mm-hmm. You do not want them at odds. Yeah. And so what you do is you specify who has the authority to make the decision.
Right. And this kind of, can get all wrapped up into the planning side of things all at once.
Now, for a moment, I'm going to take just a brief second. This is not to be a commercial. This is to talk about how would you go about getting something like this done?
that, I think, is daunting to a lot of people because they're like, wait a minute, power of attorney for healthcare and financial things.
Yeah, and also, like, if you're listening right now and you find yourself going, great, I just got a whole list, and you're going to make me wait until the end until you tell me what to do? No, I'm going to start right now saying, who can help you navigate something like this? There are do-it-yourself routes. Okay, mm-hmm. There are a lot of services online, and my experience with them has been largely decent. Usually they are pay services. If you're looking for a free will, you might be able to get something basic. If you do, keep in mind that for a will to be legal, at least in the state of Oregon, you're going to need two witnesses, and you're going to, I recommend two witnesses and then a notary that is there to affirm that the witnesses were real. And what they're doing is, and it's really interesting, a single witness won't get it done. And just you writing a note and signing it doesn't get it done. So you need to have two witnesses, and ideally two witnesses and an affirming notary or some kind of certification that somebody was present when those witnesses happened. And that's just going to give you, that what it does is it affirms to the courts, because they're going to be the one that gets this document, that it was legitimate.
Right.
So there are a lot of online sources for this. And so I think that's a good place to start if you want to do it yourself. Otherwise, there are different pathways of escalation. Most common, find an attorney, right? A lot of attorneys that are generalists, that do kind of broad sweeping scope of practice, can do this kind of thing. And the pricing is going to be depending on their hourly rate and how they do it.
Mm-hmm.
What we have typically seen is anywhere from probably $2,500 to $5,000 to get this stuff done. But honestly, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I just know the attorneys that I've worked with, it's largely where they land. And it gets, the more complex that it gets, the more expensive it gets.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a bunch of different entities and operating agreements and you need to coordinate all those things with your estate plan, expect more complexity and more hours go into it.
Yep.
Okay. There are tweener options as well. I am going to talk about our firm for a moment. We don't do this a lot, but like, Matt, how many times have you guided people through the estate planning process, you figure?
A lot. I mean,
dozens at least.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like I'm doing one or two a month oftentimes, right? Like, it's a pretty common thing because people look at this and they're like, I need to get it done. And so, yeah.
And so our firm cannot practice law. Okay. So at Little John Financial, none of us as advisors are attorneys, so we can't practice law. What we have is an organization that we work through where we guide the clients, help with establishing what the plan is, right? We go through the question process, we do the explanation process, and we guide, and then we turn it over to attorneys to draft documents. The benefit is that it's typically more affordable.
Because mm-hmm. So, we're putting in kind of all the legwork to
right.
get the information for the attorney.
And so this is a, I guess this is as close to salesy as I get on this show. I'd say if it's something that you would like to investigate further and you want more information, you can reach out to us at 541-375-0898 and just say, hey, you know, how does it work? We can get your pricing and that kind of stuff. I don't talk about pricing on air other than to say it's typically lower than attorney pricing because it depends on what you get. Right. Depends on your need. There are layers to it. And so it's hard to get that nuanced. But what I can tell you is it's typically less than the $2,500 to $5,000 range to get this stuff done.
Yeah.
It just depends, like we talked about, how complex your needs are.
Mm-hmm.
There are some needs that are too complex for us to deal with.
Absolutely.
Right? And so in which case we refer folks to to attorneys that deal with this stuff, because we're not going to play around and say like, well, maybe we can figure it out for you. Nope. Either we know what we're doing or we're not going to play games with your future. Mm-hmm. Too serious. Okay. But that's a great starting point. And I honestly, it doesn't matter if you come to us. This is not a profit center for our firm.
No.
It's go to somebody that you trust or do it yourself. There really are great tools out there and they really do work. So it is possible for you to do this stuff, but will you? That's the question, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can change your own oil. Do you? Sometimes it's just helpful to have that accountability of somebody else to help you get over the goal line. Then, and is the attorney the right path? Maybe. Is having a service do it for you? Maybe. Does it hurt to call and find out? No. So go ahead and do that. But that's where you get your initial documents pulled together, I think. Powers of attorney, advance directives, and then getting a will. Or the next one that we need to talk about a little bit is the trust world, right? So the trust world, although I'm looking at the clock, we better do this. We better grab a break. If you're wondering, trust, you really should learn about this. A lot of folks, if you need a will, you may benefit from a trust anyway. May. Stick around and we'll talk about who would benefit and why you might want to consider this when we come back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And Emma Arndt.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Show, where today we are talking about not taxes, but the other thing that is certain, and that is croaking. So,
like a frog.
Yes. We're talking about what happens when you die, and there are a few things that we've covered. I would remind you, grab the podcast. It'll be available on our website at littlejohnfs.com. It'll get posted under the Knowledge Center, where you can find the podcast information. And we've talked about, hey, you should get organized before you die. There are lots of reasons for it. The question that was first is how do you go do something like that? And you know, do you hire an attorney? Do you go online? Do you hire a firm like ours? And those are all options. And then we said, well, if you're not going to get a will, or should, you know, we actually left it at, should you get a trust? And really is what it is. So the last segment, yeah, we talked about wills and all that. But should you, what might make you want to get a trust? And I guess before we get started, Matt, first of all, can you help our listeners understand what a trust is?
Yeah, a trust is really similar to a will, except for one big piece, and that is you get to skip the probate process, right? So you don't have to go to court and have a judge kind of like assign things in different places. The trust allows things to pass through to heirs and beneficiaries without the probate process.
Yeah, how does it manage to do that?
Because the trust outlives you, right?
Ah.
So like you create a trust and you state on there who is going to, you know, execute the terms of the trust, which is kind
of
like a set of instructions, right?
It's totally
to be real basic.
Okay. Yeah.
And so then it says, you know, hey, well, I want this house to be sold and split between these two heirs. And so the trust is what, you know, as long as it's structured correctly and you put things, entitled things correctly while you're alive, the trust outlives you and it actually owns assets that have the title to things, right? And so the trust is still living even though you passed. And so that's why it gets to stay out of the courtroom.
Oh,
Think of it this way. If I, as a person, create a trust, I own the trust, and then I have the trust own my stuff. I'm in charge of the trust. I can cancel the trust if I want to. I can change the terms if I want to, as long as I'm still alive. So I am the grantor of the trust. The trust needs somebody in charge of it. That's called the trustee. That's me. And the trust also has a beneficiary. Who benefits from the stuff that the trust owns? Also me, right? I'm alive. It's all my stuff. I can change it as I want to. And so in effect, it's still all the same stuff belongs to me. But by having my trust own it, you're right, Matt. If I die, I can assign somebody else to take my spot. And the trust still owns everything.
Yes.
But what I did was I transferred my power of the pen to the next person. And now that person can fulfill the obligations of the trust instead of me. And so that means the trustee, there's a successor. Well, if there's a successor trustee, I don't need the courts to sign title to anything. Because it turns out, you know why I need a will? I'm dead. I can't sign stuff when I'm dead. Which means, how do I sign over property that has a title when I'm dead?
Yep.
And the answer is, well, I don't. Well, but if my property is owned in a trust and I die, my trust didn't die. So it can still sign. It just needs to know who's allowed to sign for it. And that document lists who's in charge. That's what's cool about it. And the rest of it, too much detail for this show, right? Well, was it ever seen revocable and irrevocable and the tax treatment and all that stuff? Okay, see me after class, right? If you need to get into more advanced tax planning and the use of trusts, that's not a radio show topic as much as a, you know, reach out to our office and we can either schedule time or, you know what, do this. Send us an email at info@littlejohnfs.com and say, I want to know more about irrevocable trusts, and we'll put on a clinic or something. Like, we can do something for a group if people want to do that, or we'll build a YouTube video for it or something and explain more about it. But
they can even text the work line.
Yeah.
And it'll come through. So
you could text 541-375-0898. And if you want to send a text and just say, I need to know more about trusts, then we can either, we'll do more, a more detailed show, or we'll do something. But we'll get you the answers you need. We can get you that information. The key here is, I think trusts, a lot of people seem to have in their mind that these are magic instruments where taxes disappear and rich people hide assets and there's no liability and you can do whatever you want and the IRS becomes invisible. And it's like, none of that is true. Like, none of that is true. That is complete fan fiction. And the people that are on the internet saying, well, if you do it this, that, and the other way, this is how people become Rockefellers and rah, rah, rah. No, even they pay taxes. It's just not how that stuff all works.
I'm going to sidetrack you for a second.
Oh, boy.
Because I'm good at this. Squirreling.
True.
So I want you to think about it. How long has Little John Financial been in business for?
16 years.
Okay. And in that time frame, think of how many people you've actually got a chance to help with this type of stuff, whether it be estate planning or managing money for them.
Sure.
Think of all of the different people that you've crossed paths with.
Yes.
And been able to have an impact in their lives to where it's made this in some way easier for them.
Yes.
Isn't that crazy to think about? Like, that's actually a pretty big impact in a community when you've been doing it for that many years and you've come across so many people. Like, it's a big deal. Think of how many different generations of, like, it. I know it sounds like soapy, but think about that. Like, that actually is pretty cool to be able to say, hey, you know, you built this thing. It's been going for a long time, and you've helped people stay either out of a court system or, you know, there's more to the trust, and I'm sure you're getting there, but, like, it can even save people quite a bit of money, too, like on estate taxes.
It is a big deal. One of the things, all right, hidden commercial, right? Hidden commercial for why we are so passionate about estate planning and why I am. There are a lot of things that folks do by accident that
sends a big paycheck to Tina Kotek.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they just unintentionally end up creating tax drag in their financial picture.
Mm-hmm.
Common example is I see folks that for lack of understanding decide to, oh, well, you know, for estate purposes, I just opened up a joint account, or I put my, you know, I have a house, and so I just went ahead and put my kid on the title so that when I die, they can just take over.
Mm.
And it's like, yeah, that's a tax nightmare.
Yeah.
Just so you're aware, because what you just did was you made a gift of half of your house, more than likely, which means that now half of that house is not going to get a step up in tax basis, nor is it their primary residence. So when you vacate it, they will owe taxes on it now. When had you not put their name on it and put it in a trust and made them the beneficiary, when you die, they get that house and they get a step up in basis, and they owe no capital gains tax on it. Okay? Now, am I giving specific tax advice right now? No. What I'm telling you is,
sometimes there is a reason to
gift
it.
Yeah, there might be a reason.
You know they're not going to sell it.
Yeah, but see me after class is the kind of thing here, because if you're just willy-nilly putting names on accounts, you could be creating a tax event.
A huge one. And we've seen that happen way too many times where it's
way
like,
too many times.
Hey, do you guys want to do some planning? And you look at it and you're like, wait, you already like...
Yeah, it's too late.
You already
did
moved
it.
All the stones. And now you're hosed.
Yeah. We have seen... Yeah. I've seen people cost themselves in taxes hundreds of thousands of dollars because of just not knowing that it would do that. And so that's the kind of stuff that just drives me bonkers when it's like, these are unforced errors.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody would say, well, I didn't want to come in because I didn't want to you know, think it was going to be expensive, or it's going to be this, or going to be that. I said, I can tell you what, the problem is, if you don't know what you don't know and you step in, it's like, yikes. This is why we also do free consultations.
Yeah,
like,
because,
for me, it's like the consult is free to figure out if there's an opportunity to help you, because I would rather have you reach out and figure out that you're fine, you don't need anything, and no, there's no bill for that. Or you know, even if somebody came and said, oh yeah, we got a hot mess here and this is going to create all kinds of problems, and they go to someone else, it's like, well, I'd rather they get the help somewhere.
That free consultation is really powerful, because I've seen a lot of people, yeah, they never become a client, fine, but what you prevented them from doing was shooting themselves in the foot, because
right.
they were about to go do something really silly, and it's not because, you know, they're dumb or anything. It's like, you just didn't know.
Yeah, it's not an intelligence issue.
No.
It's that there's complexity in this world, and there's no roadmap for this. Why would you see it?
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, I can assure you, if somebody asked me to go build a house, I'd make mistakes, because I don't do that, and I don't know how it all fits together. Like, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean I don't have the skills to learn it. It means I don't know it yet.
Mm-hmm.
And the likelihood of me stumbling across that versus somebody that does it all the time, they have knowledge because of experience.
Right.
And it's sort of like with Social Security and Medicare and so forth. Usually you get one bite of the apple. Like Social Security, you apply for it once. A lifetime of contributions, you get one time to get it right. And people will just make a decision and pull the trigger and not, they don't really think about it. It's just like, well, I just did it. And go, well, you could have optimized and gotten more out of the system had you done it this way or that way.
Yeah.
And but the decision's already made. Now we can't unring the bell.
Yep.
Yeah.
So yeah, the whole idea of planning and the whole idea of before you take action, proofreading, right? That's what professionals can do. It's like, I'm like, hey, take advantage of the free consult just to have somebody proofread.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I have a question for you, David.
Okay.
So when do you need to start planning for a trust or a will, or like how young, right? Is it 20, 30, 50, 60?
So
what do you think?
The answer is coming after our break.
Ugh.
I know, I'm going to make everybody stick around. It's actually a really great question, Emma. The short answer is probably sooner than you think. Let me give you some specific circumstances, but let's grab our last break. We'll be right back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And I'm Art.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang, welcome back to the home stretch of the True Wealth Show. Interesting show, because we're talking about what should you do to prepare for a good death. It's kind of morbid, but at the same time, this is stuff that, you know, this is what grown-ups have to talk about sometimes. And Emma, you asked a great question at the break. Could you repeat it for us?
Yeah, when do we need to start thinking about this kind of stuff? How soon is too soon? Is there a too soon?
Well,
when do you really need to start planning?
There's probably a too soon, and like, if you're a minor, then you're still kind of under your parents' jurisdiction at that point. You can't really sign contracts, that kind of stuff.
You probably don't own a lot.
And that's the thing. There's not a lot to own, although sometimes minors inherit trusts and things like that, but the trust usually already has the instructions and the people mm-hmm. associated with it. I would say probably the first major milestone, if you're single, would be if you start acquiring physical property,
mm-hmm.
right? Vehicles still can be managed through the DMV and so forth. But when you start getting physical property, then you want to start having an idea who's going to be responsible for this kind of stuff if I die.
Mm-hmm.
The next one would be if you partner up. Right. If you enter into some kind of long-term committed relationship, it doesn't necessarily have to be a marriage, but typically that's what we're going to associate it with. So you get married, and especially if kids get involved. If your kids get involved, it turns out you don't have to have stuff. You've got kids. And the kids are kind of like stuff. Somebody's going to have to take care of them if it's not you. And so you need to give instructions.
Mm-hmm.
And so the will is really useful for that kind of stuff. So
got it.
It's typically you start, you know, probably in your early 20s this stuff is happening, but maybe sooner. interestingly enough, if you get a retirement plan, that has some built-in estate features, right? You get to pick who inherits a retirement plan. It's called a beneficiary designation. And that shows up on things like IRAs and Roth IRAs and 401ks. You designate who would get it. It also shows up if you buy life insurance. You get to specify who gets it. But there's a sneaky little caveat there. The beneficiary designation is something that people sometimes forget to update if things in your life change. So, you know, it's like, here's the idea of, hey, I bought life insurance and then got married and forgot to take my parents off the policy and turn it into my spouse. That's a real thing that has happened. The ex-wife, too. I got a divorce and I forgot to take my ex off the life insurance. That's a real thing that's happened, too. And guess what? The courts have said, hey, the ex gets it.
Yeah, dance all the way to the bank.
So that's real. And so estate planning is also about, there's a maintenance program for this. But how soon would you start? You know, as soon as you have things that need to be managed is the you know, vague answer to it. But I'd say you're probably, by the time you're in your mid-20s, you're probably on the path to that.
Yeah, that makes total sense. And is it something that can be, like, modified as time goes on? And
oh, 100%, yeah. These things are all pliable, right? That even the trusts, typically we call these living trusts or what we call irrevocable. A revocable trust. I misspoke on that one. Revocable means I can change my mind. So the changing your mind is the same thing that was saying I can amend it. I can cancel it, but I can also amend it. And that's going to go on until you are not legally competent to make the decisions or you're dead. Or it may be that you create a different kind of trust that is not revocable. And an irrevocable trust, again, not a subject for today's show, but that would exist where you would basically give stuff away. It goes into an irrevocable trust, and then it's no longer your property. That's really how that effectively works. And so when it's no longer your property, it has different tax treatment. There's different strategies for why you would do that. But that's part of what that exists for. So if we're kind of looking at the mistakes here in the last few minutes, what are some of the mistakes that I think that we see in estate planning? And these are just things that you should look out for. One of them would be not updating beneficiaries, like we just talked about. Another one, you kind of hinted at this on the break, Emma. There may be stuff that's not written down that's still important. Family heirlooms or things that are important to an heir that should ideally be discussed so that they don't become fights.
Yeah. Yep. Right?
That's a big deal because the emotions are going to be running high after somebody passes away. And so having that plan in advance really helps. Another thing that I sometimes see is folks just push to get stuff done too fast. Big decisions, right? I've had kind of this is a tough one, but I've had a bit of a ministry in my life working with widows. And I talk often about, hey, you don't have to make this decision fast. You're grieving. Don't let somebody pressure you right now. You can take your time and it will still be okay. You know, and you know, there's not going to be so much opportunity left on the table here that, you know, if you don't get into this opportunity right now, it's not going to work. It's very rare. Like, I can't think of a circumstance where that's ever been the case. So just take a breath, give yourself time to process, and more important, don't make big decisions, because when you're really emotional, you make that big decision, you may actually live to regret the decision because it was not made in a appropriate mental framework. You made it too quickly, and then it's hard to change. So those are issues. Any others that you can think of, Matt, that you've seen?
Yeah, the one that I've seen too often is where people ignore the estate tax version of things, right? Like, they have a pretty decent size estate. They did a good job. They created a trust, but they were like in Oregon where you get, you know, if it's done correctly, $2 million, right? Mm-hmm. They far exceed that, where it's like, okay, you know, your entire estate between retirement accounts and real estate is $5 million, and you kind of want to ignore that $3 million of overage, you know, and then they turn a blind eye to it, and then their, you know, kids end up with a $300,000 tax bill or whatever. And it's like, well, you didn't have to do that. Like, we could have really explored the gifting strategy or like charitable donations. Like, we could have done more things, because I just don't like the state getting more in tax revenue than they really should get. So that one bothers me the most, I think.
Yeah, that's a tricky one. And what I would say is, again, we don't have sufficient time to go deep into this, but there are a couple of gotchas that I would just want to plant out there for you to think about at the last minute here. One of them is that if you have highly appreciated assets, things that you bought for really cheap and they've gone up a lot in value, you know, I bought Apple stock for $2, something like that, those are potential tax time bombs for your heirs if they're mishandled.
Right.
So it's just useful to take and look at that with an intentional eye.
Exactly.
And I think the estate tax is another one that's often overlooked. Is basically in the state of Oregon, if you're sloppy, your exemption is about $1 million, even as a couple.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Okay.
As a couple, if you have more than $1 million worth of stuff, then the state starts looking for more for tax.
And what's crazy is someone in their 40s can easily hit that. You got equity in your house and some retirement accounts. It's like, good job, you have $1 million worth of stuff.
Yeah, you can be a non-liquid millionaire and be exposed to estate tax.
Yep.
And it's not necessarily urgent for a spouse, but it's if you because there's unlimited transfer of assets if you die to your spouse, but there's other issues with how much exemption they would get if your spouse died.
Well, and think if there was just a simple life insurance policy tacked onto that. It's like, oh, you just had a $500,000 life insurance policy that
counts as an asset.
Yeah, and so now you're really hosed.
Okay.
Yeah. So bottom line is, we're looking at the clock here, is I would really encourage you to, there's a lot of good planners out there. Reach out to somebody, get some help with this stuff, just to, like I said, to proofread. If you haven't looked at your estate documents in more than 5 or 6 years, if it's been more than that, it's probably worth a revisit.
And it changes quick.
All right, last minute. Here's how you reach us, 541-375-0898. Thanks for tuning in.